Our Torah commands us, you shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall not ill-treat any widow or orphan. I will heed their outcry as soon as they cry out to me. In the Torah, we learn of many times that the children of Israel or our matriarchs or patriarchs were strangers in a land not their own and were mistreated at the hands of others. Some of the stories are so familiar to us, and maybe others not as familiar to us. Sarah and Abraham, soon after they arrive in the land of Israel, there's a famine. They have to flee the land, and actually they end up in Egypt, where Sarah is taken hostage by the king and eventually is freed because of God performing a miracle. We certainly know the story of Joseph, who is sold down into Egypt and ends up in a prison, and only through his great and miraculous abilities to interpret dreams is he led out of prison. And of course, the foundational story of the Jewish people when we were enslaved in Egypt and God heard our cries and freed us with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm and brought us to the land of Israel. And yet, on Rosh Hashanah morning, on this most important holiday in the Jewish calendar, our Torah reading does not tell the story of the oppression of the Israelite people. Instead, it tells the story of the oppression of Hagar Hamitzrit, Abraham's wife in addition to Sarah, Hagar the Egyptian, and her mistreatment at the hands of Abraham and Sarah. We note that she is Egyptian, and that should resonate with us, of course. But let's talk about a moment about her name, Hagar. Hagar, the stranger. When we are told not to mistreat Hagar, we are told not only that we should not mistreat any stranger, but in this Torah portion this morning, we learn of a very specific stranger. You shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall not ill-treat any widow or orphan, for I will hear their outcry as soon as they cry out to me. Sarah becomes jealous of Hagar and her child, Ishmael, and tells Abraham to banish them. Abraham banishes both Hagar and her child, sends her away with not enough food and not enough water. And we hear this morning in the Torah portion that God hears her cry and saves her and her child and makes of Ishmael a great nation. Ishmael, who becomes the father of the Arab nations. Why on this morning of all mornings are we reminded about the mistreatment of a stranger at our own hands? Is it any coincidence when we gather together to think about our deeds of the past that we are told that we need to read a story about guilt that goes back to the very beginning? Now, the stranger, how Hagar is, Gar is usually translated, or Ger is usually translated, actually means something very specific in the Jewish tradition. It doesn't mean stranger in the sense of just somebody that you don't know. There could be many strangers, and they could be Israelites or non-Israelites. But a Ger in our tradition is a stranger that is not a citizen. It is somebody that is a resident alien, that dwells amongst you, that does not have the rights that a citizen would have, and therefore are considered extremely vulnerable, are in an extremely vulnerable position in society because they don't have the laws that a citizen would have to protect them. And yes, You know where I'm going with this sermon. In August, I was able to travel down to El Paso, Texas, and Juarez, Mexico, with a delegation led by HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. It was a very small delegation. They had just installed their new board president, and they wanted to bring him down to see firsthand what was happening at the border. So it was HIAS's board president, two people that work for HIAS, the president, the CEO of National Council for Jewish Women, and myself, and we had the opportunity to travel together. Now, many of you hopefully have heard of HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. This is the same organization that helped many of our grandparents and great-grandparents to settle in the United States when they first came here. I'd like to always remind you, when we are talking about our own ancestors that came to this country, they came as refugees and asylum seekers. And so we went down to learn about what was happening at the border. And it was a searing experience. I recently had an op-ed published by the Jerusalem Post about that experience. I will send it out after Rosh Hashanah, since so much of the op-ed was about what I was going to share with you today. I wanted to share the sermon first, but Nancy will have it sent out in this coming week. HIAS's tagline is, "We used to help refugees because they were Jewish, and we now help refugees because we are Jewish." So HIAS was founded to help Jewish refugees. It was founded over 100 years ago, and the organization continues to help refugees. That's still their mission, though very few of these people are Jewish right now. By the way, just an interesting tidbit, Emma Lazarus, the poet who wrote the new Colossus that is on the Statue of Liberty, actually in her day was a volunteer for HIAS. It was also a time of anti-immigration sentiment when she wrote that poem, and the anti-immigration sentiment at that time, much of it was directed against the Jewish community. Since taking office, President Trump has made the dismantling of our refugee settlement program a primary goal. His Remain in Mexico policy, which last month was upheld by the Supreme Court, says that asylum seekers must apply for asylum in their first port of entry. And so you may ask, what's the problem with that? That seems why, you know, so what? But the reality is that when they arrive in Mexico, it is a dangerous situation. There are inadequate shelters. There are no jobs. There is high crime. And they have no access to legal help. And so if you want to personalize this for a moment, to conceptualize what this meant for our people, if you think in the years that the members of the Jewish community escaped from Europe during the Holocaust and ended up in a place like Shanghai and were told, good, you're in Shanghai, guess what? You get to stay there forever. Now, HIAS has been on the border to provide legal assistance to those who are able to actually get to the United States. But the problem is that when you're in Mexico, you have almost no access to legal aid, and you're about five times more likely to win your asylum case if you actually have a lawyer. HIAS right now is in the process of exploring opening an office in Juarez and in Tijuana so they can reach the people that need the most help. While in El Paso, we learned that not one person has been granted asylum on the southern border since last November. Actually, one person was granted asylum, but the government is appealing it. The lawyers in El Paso, both highest lawyers and lawyers that work for other refugee asylum organizations, they spoke to us candidly about the challenge that refugees face and their own secondary trauma from dealing with the relentless need of their clients and their inability to win asylum for any of them. They work day and night and feel that if they give themselves a day off, no one else will, because they can't really help the people that they are there to serve. And their ongoing trauma was compounded by last month's terror attack in El Paso, where a white supremacist went on a shooting rampage in a Walmart, killing 22 people and injuring 24 others. I arrived in El Paso hours before the highest trip was to begin, and I have a colleague, a conservative rabbi who serves the conservative congregation in El Paso, and he offered to take me on a tour of El Paso, and of course he brought me to the Walmart Memorial. There were many people that Sunday afternoon visiting the memorial. It's a whole wall with pictures and posters. But the two things that struck me the most, of course, as a rabbi and a Jew visiting, is somebody had put up an Israeli flag just about in the middle of the wall. But there was also a poster from the Jewish Community Center of Pittsburgh offering comfort to the victims and to the survivors. We did not visit any ICE detention centers when we were in El Paso, but we did travel to a shelter in Juarez run by the Mexican government. I want to say it was an interesting juxtaposition because in October, I traveled with a group called Encounter, which brings Jewish leaders into Palestine to visit Palestinians, to visit refugee camps, to visit, we went to Bethlehem, we went to Ramallah, and we had almost no security briefing. We traveled with security, but we had no security briefing to go on that trip. But to go into Juarez, we needed to have a security briefing. So we were told that the chance of crime, of being a victim of crime, was high. The chance of a traffic accident was high. The chance of a terrorist attack was low. But the chance of being kidnapped was moderate. So this is not, it's a little disconcerting, but of course we went nonetheless. So while we were in Juarez, we went to a shelter that was run by the Mexican government for these refugee asylum seekers. The shelter was a former factory. It holds a little over 500 people, all families from throughout Latin America. The residents sleep on small pads in common, big common rooms on the floor. They line up to be able to use showers. There is no air conditioning, and the day that we visited Juarez, it was 104 degrees. And they were very grateful to be housed and to be fed. When we arrived, we were immediately surrounded by beautiful, smiling children and their parents. That day, the parents were staging a quiet protest, standing together in the foyer, because they had just been informed they could only stay in the shelter for 2 weeks, and then they would be released to the streets to fend for themselves. They were understandably terrified. Several of the adults spoke English, and they shared with us the stories of the terror that they left behind in their home countries and the hopes they had for a future in the United States. One woman, a former teacher from El Salvador, told us of the local gangs that had come for her 12-year-old daughter. Her husband and her daughter were able to get to the United States, but she and her two other children were now trapped in Mexico. A woman from Guatemala told us that her land had been stolen and that she and her family were left impoverished. The right to flee one's country and to seek safety in another is protected in both United States and international law. and for those requesting asylum in the United States to be denied a fair process could mean a return to some of the most violent countries in the world, to situations that most of us cannot imagine. Looking at the faces of these desperate families, anxious about their futures, I kept asking myself, are these the people that our government is so scared of? Are these the people that our government insists on criminalizing for asking to get out of a dangerous, life-threatening situation and to come to safety in the United States? As we toured the shelter, our delegation was surrounded by women and children asking if we could help them. I stood there listening to their pleas, knowing that there was little or literally nothing that I could do for them. A young man holding out a small scrap of paper approached me. "Could you call my mother? She lives in Arizona and she doesn't know where I am." Someone from HIAS took this piece of paper, but given that he was going to be removed from the shelter in two weeks, she still wouldn't know where he was. As we left, many people came and said to us, "Thank you for listening. God bless you." I was there to bear witness, but knowing that, I still knew that there was nothing that I could actually do to help these desperate human beings standing right in front of me. And that feeling of powerlessness was devastating. The Torah commands us, "You shall not wrong a stranger or oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall not ill-treat any widow or orphan. I will heed their outcry as soon as they cry out to me." This charge, to care for the stranger, is the most repeated law in the Torah. Over and over, the Torah tells us that we are to love the stranger because God loves the stranger and that God hears and will heed their cries. Every Pesach, we are told that we need to regard ourselves as if we were slaves and we were freed. And we are told that so that we continue over and over to sensitize ourselves to the sounds of the crying of people that are being oppressed. The Jewish people know all too well what it means to be oppressed and to try and flee oppression, only to be turned away and denied protection. We are now free in America, but we also remember that we were once slaves in Egypt and strangers across the globe, in Babylonia, in Spain, in Russia, in Germany. We remember that America was a safe harbor for many of our ancestors, but we also remember that America refused others in their country in a given year. From 1980 until 2017, the average refugees that were let into this country, 95,000. Last year, the administration dropped it to 30,000, and this year, the administration just set it at 18,000. Our country will only let in 18,000 refugees and asylum seekers this year. Worrying that this number was going to be quite low, over the summer, HIAS circulated a clergy letter for rabbis, asking rabbis to sign a letter speaking out against setting this number so low. It was signed by over 1,500 rabbis in the United States. You cannot get 1,500 rabbis to agree on who wrote the Torah. But 1,500 rabbis signed the following letter. "We, Jewish clergy from across the country, call on our elected officials to protect the fundamental right to seek asylum in the United States. The right to flee one's country and to seek safety in another is protected in both U.S. and international law. Our tradition teaches that each and every person deserves to be treated justly and with compassion. However, under current U.S. policy and practice, asylum seekers instead face an ever-lengthening list of injustices, including family separation, long periods of detention in jail-like facilities, and denial of due process in their legal proceedings. Simply put, our country is treating these individuals as criminals, even though seeking asylum is a legal right, and this must change. The Jewish people knows what it means to be turned away and denied protection. As Jews, we understand the heart of the refugee, and the current actions of our government echo some of the darkest moments of our own history. Our concern does not apply only to the Jewish past, but to our present. We are alarmed by the rising prominence of ideologies that dehumanize and vilify immigrants and refugees. We are committed to fighting hate and standing for our American and Jewish values of protecting the persecuted and welcoming the stranger. We call on our elective officials to act immediately to provide a just and humane asylum process for those seeking safety in our country. In Jewish tradition, there is no higher obligation than to save the life of another. As Jewish clergy, we will not stay silent as our country turns back on individuals fleeing danger. The refugee crisis is a Jewish issue, one that demands from us a Jewish response. As one of our congregants recently reminded me, that there are some that interpret the sounding of the shofar as the sound of crying, specifically the crying of a mother over her children. Our Torah readings and Haftorah readings actually have the tears of many mothers. In this morning's Torah portion, Hagar cries for the near death of Yishmael. Our tradition tells us that tomorrow, when we read of Isaac being led off to be bound at the altar, that Sarah is aware of this and cries. Today in our Haftarah, we hear of Hannah crying out for a child. And tomorrow we read of our matriarch Rachel crying for her children, the Israelites, as they are led into captivity. And this should help us remember the cries of mothers separated from their children, of mothers and fathers separated from their children at our southern border. It is our responsibility as Jews, citizens, and human beings to commit ourselves to aid and protect those seeking safe asylum in this country. Doing so is simply an embodiment of our Jewish values. Elie Wiesel once remarked that sometimes we must interfere when human lives are endangered, when human dignity is in jeopardy, national borders and sensitivities become irrelevant. Whenever men and women are persecuted because of their race, religion, or political views, that place must, at that moment, become the center of the universe. There are those of us who are heeding this call, and HIAS is a truly remarkable organization. They're also organizing right now Spanish-speaking volunteers to travel to Mexico to provide Know Your Rights presentations and to help screen asylum seekers for potential legal representation. So if you speak Spanish or you know someone who speaks Spanish and they would like, they're looking for people just to go down a week at a time, please, you can contact me and I'll get you in touch, or you can go to the HIAS website. We don't all have the ability to join HIAS on the front lines of this battle, but we can assist this effort in other ways. We can advocate on the behalf of refugees, demanding that our elected officials act to provide a just and humane asylum process. We can contribute money and provide desperately needed resources, in-kind donations, and airline miles. We can join with organizations such as TRUA, the Rabbinic Call for Human Rights, which has been working to mobilize rallies and other activities to protect immigrants facing deportation and to provide them with legal assistance and other resources. I actually believe that history is going to judge us for what is happening right now on our border. And I truly believe that HIAS is saving the honor of the Jewish people. When the history of this dark time is written, it will praise the deeds of the righteous who heard the commandment and remembered their history and who stood up in the name of justice and mercy to the pharaohs of their time. Shana Tova.